Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. You've heard stories about quests for buried treasure, but finding treasure could be as simple as knowing what to keep and what to throw away, or at least not put on a pedestal from among your own possessions. Coming up this week, a treasure hunter's boot camp. It's aimed at helping the novice collector separate the old, not just the old from the, well, the old from the new, and the old from the just old and from the old and collectible. It's a fundraiser. It's part of a collaboration between the Columbus Symphony Orchestra League and Garth's Auctions, and it's called Partners at the Podium. We'll tell you more about that collaboration later. To learn more about the treasure hunter boot camp this week, you can go to the link at our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Joining us now to talk about the art and science of appraisal is Amelia Jeffers. She's president of Garth's Auctioneers and Appraisers. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
You reminded me, I was reading an article about you, and you reminded, and in reading it, you reminded me of the advice I've heard given to art collectors. Don't buy it if you don't want to live with it.
That's exactly right.
Just in case it never makes what you think it will, or the, you know, you never know.
Right. So Tom Porter, who is my late business partner, used to say, buy what makes you smile. And I think that's great advice, because just as you said, these are things, this isn't a stock you're going to put in a portfolio and forget about, or even a piece of real estate that you might invest in but not see every day. These are things that hopefully you're going to live with and walk by. So, you know, you want to walk by things that make you happy. At the end of the day, you know, some of the items that you purchase may end up being good investments, but, you know, this market is not unlike any other, and it is subject to market conditions and fluctuations, and it goes up and down. There's, I think, sometimes been a thought by the general public that because it's old, it just continues to go up in value, and that's not really the case.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Once again, my guest is Amelia Jeffers, president of Garth's Auctioneers and Appraisers. If you have a question or comment for Amelia Jeffers, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. Let's not get too far down into the weeds. Let's keep our questions sort of generalized. She can't appraise over the air. The email is allsides@wosu.org. Same instructions apply, but there's lots of questions to ask. If you have one, please do. Join us. The interest in appraisals has increased incredibly with the advent of all those reality shows about pawn shops and pickers. And then there's the quintessential Antiques Roadshow and also the History Detectives on PBS. Has the interest been good or bad for your business?
So, this, you know, there are mixed opinions about that within our industry. But my opinion is it's been good. Anything that raises awareness about the collectability of these items is a good thing. You know, 20 or 30 years ago, I like to think that people had at least an interest in finding out what their items were worth before holding a garage sale. But, you know, probably some goodies were slipping through. Today, not so much, because everyone has this idea that I better double check. And I think that's a good thing. It's driven traffic to our business and other businesses. It's raised awareness about the collectability. And also, I think in a market that could be a little more down than it is, it's helped prices.
Then you hear those stories, particularly on Antiques Roadshow, where people find things in dumpsters or they're just giving them away at the end of a garage sale, and there's no value at all. And you're thinking, well, thank goodness someone saved it.
Yeah. We have a great story if you'd like to hear.
Yes.
About a pair of portraits by a well-known itinerant artist in the 19th century named Sheldon Peck. And the portraits were done on panel, on board. And in Pittsburgh, there was a family who owned some storage units, and they were having lock cutting day, which, as you know, is probably, you know, the day when they're cutting the locks of all of the unpaid units. And they had three piles going. They had a burn pile, they had a sell pile, and a donate pile. And our client saw these portraits on top of the burn pile. And he mentioned to someone, I think those might be worth something. Maybe we want to have them checked out. And they said, well, you can have them. We're just, if you don't take them, we're going to burn them. We don't like them. So he brought them to Garth's, and we looked over them. And ultimately, they sold for $88,000.
Wow. And, you know, what a loss it would have been.
What a loss. Yeah. They're important pieces of history. That's what I love about my job most. You know, the dollars and cents of it get, you know, make the news and make it exciting for people who aren't in it. But daily we get to handle things that are 100 years old. And thinking about those stories is a pretty exciting part of our day.
the internet has given your business more access to world markets. So that's been good because you're not just limited to the 500-mile, you know, range that you might be otherwise physically.
Yeah. You know, so the internet for us has leveled the playing field between what I would say Main Street and Park Avenue. So buyers who were buying high-end art and antiques at New York auction houses now understand that they can find those things everywhere. And it's, you know, it is sort of the nature of collecting is a bit of a treasure hunt. So I think that there is joy and excitement in uncovering something at an auction house in the Midwest. So we have a huge audience now, not only on the East Coast, the West Coast, you know, all points in the United States, but all over the globe. It's really fascinating to go on to our web tracking software and look at where we're getting, you know, where from where we're receiving hits. And I've been here for all that. So in 17 years, I've gotten to see no website to, you know, I looked recently at the number of page views in the month of December were 450,000. That's amazing.
And people come to you better informed or less informed or more confused?
That's interesting. I think sometimes more confused. That's a good way to put it. You know, there's so much information on the internet that it's a little scary and sometimes some misinformation. And so weeding through all of that can be a bit overwhelming. I think that people come to us maybe a little more informed because they recognize that there might be something of value among the things they're reviewing, but a little lost.
And what's of value or what is of historical significance isn't always, well, value isn't always necessarily something that's significant. It's what's hot.
Right.
Just like with any fashion, that changes, right?
I always say it's, you know, we are not like unlike any other marketplace. We're affected by supply and demand, right? And so while you get as many different opinions about this as people you ask in my business, I am of the belief that supply and demand is the number one factor, because no matter how great the condition is, no matter how rare it is, no matter how beautifully made, if you don't have demand for it, it's not going to sell. So it's a huge factor. And, you know, we see influences by style makers, you know, the Martha Stewarts of the world, Country Living magazines, Architectural Digest, even now retail sites like Restoration Hardware and Pottery Barn. We see those as leading indicators as to what's going to be hot in the antiques and collectibles market next.
Because they're showing these reproductions often and there's lots of people who want to invest in the real deal.
That's exactly right. So they're setting the style, they're setting the look, and then people who want a more authentic look are seeking out the art and antiques that fulfill that genre.
What? How does the auction process work? How do you do it? Where does it start?
It's really funny because our staff will sometimes laugh that people ask them, well, what do you do when you're not having an auction?
Yeah, they ask me that when I'm not on the air.
Yeah.
What do you do when you're not on the air?
Yeah, exactly. We have 24 full-time people who are finding things to do when we're not having auctions. It's kind of a busy process. So, you know, it starts by an initial inquiry with either one item or an entire collection. And generally, that's done by phone or email. We look over the objects. We try to give a guess by golly on what the value is without actually handling something, which can be dangerous. But we try to be careful and do that. And then depending, you know, we've taken actually several major collections out of Dallas, Texas, and upstate New York in the past 12 months. And so you can imagine that if someone's going to send us $300,000 or $400,000 worth of art and antiques, we're going to visit them first. So we make a visit. We walk through the collection. We talk with them about the process. Some auction models are a buy and then sell. So the auctioneer is looking for objects and buying and building up an auction. We don't like that model because we think it sets us against the sellers. You know, those auctioneers are trying to buy low to sell high, and they're not doing anything without integrity. It's just the model of that business. So we only sell on commission, and so we take the items in, we list them, we photograph them. Now with the internet, everything gets multiple photographs. We have someone, we have someone retiring who's been with us for 26 years, and for the past 9 years, she has handled all of the internet photography. And we did the math. She has processed about 500,000 photographs in that period of time. So we're doing lots of things to document the objects we're selling, estimate them to the best of our ability, and then market them to buyers all over the world.
When you're planning an auction, it's an event, right?
Yes.
And do you plan it Are you looking for themes usually?
We are. Yeah. So, you know, we try to put material together that speaks to one another. So we have four auctions actually at the end of January. And one has an Asian focus. One has a European focus. The third has a fine arts focus. And the fourth is a collection of Audubon prints. And so, you know, we try to profile buyers and what types of buyers have a crossover interest. And we put things together that might appeal to those buyers on the same weekend.
You know who the buyers are out there.
We know. We're always fishing for more, but it's a pretty small audience. You know, the largest trade paper in our industry only sends about 40,000 papers. So you're talking about, in terms of these sophisticated buyers, a pretty small group of people.
Are unsophisticated people welcome?
Absolutely.
In fact, it seems like it would be kind of intimidating if you've never been to one before.
I think that can be the issue. You know, we do a lot of local marketing as well, and we have lots of collectors who, come in and buy. Any auction is really mostly frequented by a trade audience. It's considered wholesale because dealers are generally buying at auction to fill their shops and their booths at shows and that kind of thing. It is intimidating, and I think that's why, you know, it has tended to be a more wholesale kind of audience. But the more successful an auction house, the more retail buyers they cultivate. And so we work hard to get collectors comfortable with coming in too. But it can be. You know, it's an intimidation factor. You know that some people think they're going to walk in and any time they twitch their nose or cross their legs, they're going to be sending us a signal for a bid.
Would you recommend someone just come in and watch sometime?
Absolutely. It's
instead
fun.
Instead of feeling like you have to, you know, even get a...
You know, now, again, it's that whole change with the internet. You can even watch online.
Huh.
You can, there's
the
a live
action?
Yeah, there's a video feed from the auction room, not only at Garth's, but lots of places around the country. And so you can go to the website we use happens to be artfact.com. And it's a great website for perusing auction houses from around the world, and you can watch any of them live. It's a fun thing to do. I do recommend that. I think it puts you at ease when you start to realize that the auctioneer is really like a conductor, which actually, you know, along with the Columbus Symphony Orchestra partnership, partners at the podium.
Right.
The auctioneer is somewhat of a conductor. We are, managing the flow of the auction and taking a look around the room and, you know, knowing the pace, setting the pace and taking bids. And we're not going to take a bid by accident.
We're going to continue our conversation with Amelia Jeffers, president of Garth's Auctioneers and Appraisers. We will, coming up in the last segment, be talking about Partners at the Podium, the collaborative event between Garth's Auctions in Delaware and the Columbus Symphony Orchestra League, to raise money a couple different ways. First, through a boot camp that's planned for this Wednesday. You can learn more about that by going to our website at wosu.org/allsides. We have a link there for you. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Coming up, we're going to talk about the Partners at the Podium collaborative fundraising event between Garth's Auctions in Delaware and the Columbus Symphony Orchestra League. Still with me in the studio, Amelia Jeffers. She's the president of Garth's. If you have a question or comment for her about appraisals, about the auction process, about what's hot and what's not, please don't get too detailed about your particular object, but we would love generalized questions. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So we brought in an example. My producer, Michael DeBonis, brought in an oddity that he had inherited from his grandma. And a lot, you know, you see this kind of stuff on, you know, all the time. It looks, I don't know what it is. It's a mask, and it's from his grandma, so it goes back some years at least.
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
Well, I want to say first that when he mentioned to me he had this mask, I said, do you think I could take a look before we're on air?
Yeah.
Because one of the things that the TV shows have sort of conveyed is that you can hand an appraiser an object and they're going to rattle off the history in 30 seconds. But the reality is they have lots of time to prepare and they're consulting with one another and, you know, and then it's scripted and filmed.
Right.
So he was kind enough to let me take a look at it ahead of time. And I told him that I'd be happy to talk about it on air, but only if he was okay receiving disappointing news. Yeah.
And by the way, we've posted a picture of the mask on our Facebook page, All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. So it's a ceramic of some sort.
It's a terracotta.
Okay.
Yep, it's a terracotta mask. And actually, you know, one of the first things I look for when I'm appraising an object is I look for construction methods and materials. Again, I go back to Tom Porter. I have a lot of Tom Porter-isms. Tom used to say, when people asked him what's selling well at auction, he would say quality. Quality is selling well at auction. And I think that's a great thing to consider. If something was of low quality when it was made, then it, you know, it's not going to command huge prices today. It's still going to be affordable. This is a, what I would call an affordable collectible, right? So it's made, in a very crude way. It's not terribly old. And in fact, one of the second things I look for is damage. Do you see that damage right there? So it's been damaged and repaired along one side. It's made for the tourist trade, as we say.
Okay.
And so it's airport art.
Okay.
And as such, you know, it's probably valued in the $25 range. It's a fun little mask, but, you know, not terribly significant. It's more significant to him because of his family history with it.
You brought in a what looks like an ordinary blue glass vase.
It does, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. Actually, it's a Chinese vase, and it's from a Columbus collection that Garth's did not sell. But we happened to go to an estate sale, and I bought this vase there. And it dates to the Qinlong period. So it's 18th century. And the Qinlong period is sort of the Chinese Renaissance period. It's a really, really high quality period where the emperor put a large focus on production of fine art and fine, fine objects. This would not be the finest of the Qinlong period, or I might have a bodyguard with me because that period does, and the finest end of things commands in the millions of dollars. But this vase is about $1,500 to $1,800 in value. It's beautifully done. You know, it just has very perfect proportions. When you think about what was available to those craftsmen at that time in the 1700s, I think it's pretty phenomenal to consider how perfectly formed it is. The glaze is very uniformly applied.
So it's a ceramic.
It's real stylish. It's ceramic.
With a glaze, a blue glaze.
Mm-hmm, with a blue glaze. You can see the white down inside.
Right.
Yep. The Chinese market is hot, you know, for Chinese collectibles. It is a really...
Why is that?
Well, you know, a number of factors. Number one, their economy has been going well for quite a few years, so they have disposable income. Number two, we have a lot of their culture. You know,
they want
Western
to buy it
world,
back.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
The Western world, we occupied portions of Asia for a long, long time in the 18th and 19th centuries. And so, or, I'm sorry, 19th and 20th centuries. So, you know, they want to buy it back. And some of us, I like to say some of us bought better than others. Some of us just brought back airport art, and that's okay. But some of us actually brought back some amazing treasures. And we've had the good fortune at Garth's over the past couple of years to handle just some really phenomenal jade, and we've helped to usher it back to the buyers in China who are interested in preserving their history. When I think about it from that perspective, you know, I really have a lot of admiration for those buyers. When you think about just the dollars and cents, I think you can get cynical on, gosh, you know, it's just, you know, they have money, they're driving up the price in any market, whether it's, you know, the a bullish contemporary art market or the
Someone's
Chinese
collectibles. Someone has money out there, right?
Right. And if you just think about it from that perspective, but then if you really drill down in this case where you're thinking about the cultural aspects and the significance for them to get back these ceremonial objects, these everyday objects that their ancestors used, it's really a romantic and exciting thing for us to be able to help.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest, Amelia Jeffers, president of Garth's Auctioneers and Appraisers. Jerome in Marysville, you're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you. Long time no chat.
I know. Hi, Jerome.
Yeah. Hi. Ms. Jeffers, I wanted to follow up on something you've been saying all along about how Garth's a regionally located auction house. How would someone know when it's you know, should I be taking something to Christie's in New York or Butterfield's in San Francisco?
Yeah.
How would, you know, and would you ever say, this is too big for us to handle?
Absolutely. Yeah, so I think that's a great question. You know, both, there are two sides to that question. There are times when we've had conversations and we say, I don't necessarily think too big is the right phrase, because as one example in the Chinese market, if we had, we have fantastic, very high-end Chinese buyers who are sophisticated and have the wherewithal to push prices to a very high level. But for example, if you brought me you know, a contemporary artwork that I know requires the attendance, the in-house attendance of a Sotheby's contemporary art auction, we're going to advise you to go there. You know, it's in our best interest to keep people coming back to Garth's because they trust us. The same way, you know, we tell people if we don't have the right market for lower-end objects, right? So if somebody comes to us and they have some, you know, Eastlake Victorian furniture, I'm going to recommend a smaller country auction house because you'll actually get more money there than you'll get at Garth's. So, you know, I recommend finding the place that's most approachable, number one. You know, the good news is if you're located in Central Ohio, you can drive to us. Shipping things off to New York to have them simply evaluated is a little more of a challenge. But we do work with larger and smaller auction houses all the time to refer clients, and likewise they do to us.
Thanks, Jerome, for that call. Ted in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, Ted.
Hi. Just wanted to talk a little bit about fine string instruments. As a parent of three children who went through the strings program here in Columbus, I learned quite a bit about stringed instruments, but boy, what a nightmare it is to negotiate that or navigate that, because it's not only, some of these instruments are not only really viable because of their age, but you know, you also have to play the thing as well, and you have to be able to buy it, afford it. I mean, my children were looking at instruments at any day that would be worth maybe $5,000 up to $350,000. Just in one shop, and you'd say, what can that mean for a parent to buy something? And then the fraud, the number of instruments that are now being maybe offered as what they really aren't. Do you ever deal in stringed instruments, or do you just go send those off to somebody like Sotheby's or something like that?
Yeah, so interestingly, there is a stringed instruments expert in Central Ohio, and he doesn't work at Garth's, but he consults with us. And he's world-renowned and flies under the radar. He doesn't, you know, have a shingle outside his house. But, you know, back to Jerome's comment about how do you know where to go? For us as a company, we're only as good as the experts we either employ or consult with, right? So we try to work hard to cultivate these relationships. If you showed me, you know, a $5,000 instrument and a $300,000 instrument, personally, I'm going to have not a lot of a clue. But I'm going to consult with people who are trusted. And so, you know, there's an auction house in Boston, Skinner Auction House, is a peer of ours, and they handle probably more stringed instruments than Sotheby's and Christie's combined. And so it's interesting because Sotheby's and Christie's are sort of the names that everybody automatically goes to, but there are all these sub-markets and all these micro-markets that really specialists develop, specialties develop, and they really get to be well-known for it. But Skinner in Boston's a great resource for that.
All right, Ted, thanks for that call. Email from Deb. She asks, would you comment as to why some educated and well-respected professional appraisers differ in their appraisals? Might location make a difference? Does audience location make a difference? So that's an interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that a country auction might bring in more money. The appraisal might be different for an item.
So, you know, the appraisal shouldn't really be different in theory, right? Because the appraisal, depending upon what type of value you're trying to establish, if you're looking for fair market value or insurance value, those are going to be different. But among appraisers, it shouldn't vary dramatically. There is an old adage, appraisal is more art than science. And so there is some subjectivity to the evaluation of the condition of an object or the originality of an object. That can be subjective. But in terms of market response and market marketability, that should be a fairly consistent number. You know, appraisers might be off slightly, but not too much. And if they are, if you've gotten two opinions and they're widely different, then I would recommend getting a third opinion to sort of break the tie.
How do you, what is a rarity? What does that mean? How do you determine when something's rare? I have a clock. I've looked forever to find one like it. Mm-hmm. I can't find anything like it. Doesn't mean that it's popular, but I wonder, am I not seeing it on eBay or Craigslist or whatever those things are because no one cares about it?
Yeah. So, you know, I like to say that rarity is definitely about perspective, right? I mean, you have to be in context. And so what might be rare to one person may not be rare at all if you're in the business of buying and selling art and antiques, which we are. And so rarity can affect value positively only when lots of other factors are at play. This class that we're doing at Scioto on Wednesday, I have a slide that has a picture of a bicycle with square tires. That would be a pretty rare bike to have square tires. Might not be very marketable or desirable, but it would be pretty rare. So, you know, rarity is only one factor, and it can be hard to know whether or not it's rare. You know, we have really, as general appraisers at Garth's, it's our job to have lots of resources at our fingertips and to be most familiar with how to research effectively and efficiently. And so, you know, there are specific websites for various types of collectibles, for example, books. You know, I was going to mention a website that, you know, these, by the way, have nothing to do with Garth's. These aren't benefiting us. I just am interested in plugging them because they're fantastic resources that people don't know about. Bookfinder.com. Bookfinder.com is this amazing search engine that will search all sorts of websites for a book by publisher, by author, by book title. And you can get an idea for yourself what the value of the book is. That's probably the number one item that's brought to walk-in appraisal days, believe it or not, are books. And this simple resource, bookfinder.com, is available. But you can, you know, determining the rarity can be difficult. And you're right, eBay is a great place to look. Craigslist is a great place to look. But I would always say, be careful with the information you find there because it's not always as accurate as you'd like for it to be.
If you're trying to figure out authenticity, what are the very first things? So there's a mark on the bottom of something. You know, nowadays you can go online once again and find a lot of stuff that you couldn't even a few years ago.
That's right.
Because people are starting to amass these things. Mm-hmm. But if you're trying to figure out authenticity, what do you recommend people look at first?
So authenticity is probably the single factor that it's difficult to walk away from an industry professional for assistance with that. You know, I talk about demystifying this process, and I try in my work and in these presentations, I try to demystify because I think that our industry does this great job of sort of like the Antiques Roadshow, right? We're going to appraise your object, and we hold all the knowledge, and knowledge is power, and, you know, we are experts in what we're doing. But it's really basic, and a lot of it is research-based. But authenticity is really challenging because it really takes repetition, and it takes looking at a lot. For example, if you want to authenticate a Tiffany lamp, as one example, those things were, you know, Tiffany lamps have been faked numerous times. And so to say that you're going to look for a mark is not enough because the fakes are marked. It's going to be looking at, you know, construction methods and materials and being very, very familiar with the types of materials and construction methods that person used.
On Antiques Roadshow on PBS, they often pause with a piece if it has a story. With documentation, letters, newspaper articles, something like that. And they're always thrilled when that happens. It makes it more valuable.
That's provenance.
Provenance,
yeah,
right.
In our world, that's provenance. And provenance can add significant value. You know, provenance is only as valuable, though, as the paper trail that you have to track it. In other words, someone came to one of our walk-in appraisal days, and she brought a ring. And it appeared to be a Victorian ring with a paste stone. And she mentioned that it had belonged to Adolf Hitler. I said, wow, that's fascinating. You know, can we look over some of the materials you have that link it to him? She didn't have any. You know, unfortunately,
it
negates the provenance, right? We have a great client in Virginia, actually, on the Rappahannock River, very close to Jamestown. So he's in the perfect place for this to be authentic. He has a table and in a huge, huge old mansion from the 19th century. And his family has always called it the Treaty Table. And supposedly, it is the table on which Cornwallis signed the treaty ending the Revolutionary War. They've lost all the paperwork, and they did have paperwork at one point, but they have nothing now. And so now it's just a table with a great story. So those stories are really fascinating, and they can be fun to share around the Thanksgiving table. But if you have a story, write it down. Write it down. Keep the paperwork. Keep the pictures. Put them in envelopes. I've seen people take, you know, like manila envelopes and tuck everything in it and tape it on the back. Perfect. Then you know it's not going to get lost or misplaced.
We'll take one more call before we move on. Alan in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Alan.
Yeah, I got a question on are all your auctions absolute, or can you put a minimum on the things that are auctioned? Second thing is the cost. What's it cost to put an item to auctioneering?
Sure. So that's a great question. At Garth's, not every auction is absolute. We indicate them as absolute or public auction at the front of the catalog or brochure. And what Alan is referring to is a reserve, which is a confidential minimum agreed to by the seller and the auction house below which an item won't sell. And by law and by policy, the reserve never exceeds the low estimate. So, for example, let's say you have a painting that you'd like to sell, and we know that that artist generally sells for anywhere from $12,000 to $15,000 at auction. You might decide that you're willing to maybe go down to $10,000 in case it's an off day, but you don't want to go below that. So we might estimate it at $10,000 to $15,000, and we'll put a reserve at $10,000. So there's no chance for it to drop below. We do handle reserves. We handle them on higher-end objects. In other words, we don't handle reserves on, you know, $200 lots. It wouldn't be in our interest or the seller's to do that. And the cost for selling at auction varies from auction house to auction house. At Garth's, it's anywhere from 10% to 25%. Believe it or not, it can be as low as 0% for really high-end items. For $100,000 paintings, it can be very, very low. It just really depends on the quantity of objects that are being sent to auction. But our standard commissions are 10 to 25% at Garth's.
Okay. Alan, thank you for that call. We'll continue our conversation with Amelia Jeffers of Garth's Auctioneers. Also joining us will be the president of the Columbus Symphony Orchestra League to talk about that new collaborative Partners at the Podium. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Still with me in the studio, Amelia Jeffers, president of Garth's Auctioneers and Appraisers. Is that the name of the company?
It is.
Okay, great. Yeah. And also joining me now is Connie Cahill. She is president of the Columbus Symphony Orchestra League. Connie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann. Nice to be here.
We invited Connie on to talk about, with Amelia, the new Partners at the Podium collaborative fundraising project between Garth's Auctions in Delaware and the Columbus Symphony Orchestra League to raise money two ways. First of all, through the boot camp. It's on Wednesday. It's open to the public. There is a fee, of course. That's how they raise money from it. If you want to learn more about that, you can go to the link on our website at wosu.org/allsides. But Amelia Jeffers, can you tell us what the boot camp will involve?
Yeah, so the boot camp is really about demystifying this auction, this appraisal process, and it's giving people the basic tools that any appraiser uses when appraising items. You know, I like to say at the end of the two-hour sort of interactive presentation, you certainly won't be able to go out and appraise things, but you'll walk around your own house and you'll walk around antique shops with a new appreciation for how to establish value and maybe an eye for what might have value, because we do talk about what's hot and what's not and how to look for those things.
And Connie Cahill, tell us about the other element, dimension to the partners at the podium?
Well, we're really very pleased to work with Amelia and Garth. This was an idea that kind of percolated up to the top. I have to thank our CSOL member, Marion Fisher, who was a client, basically, of Garth's, and we were all sitting around the table trying to think about some new way that we could raise funds for the symphony. And Marion happened to mention her relationship with Amelia and Jeff. And the more we spoke about it, the more we really got excited, because we know that there are lots of folks out here in the Central Ohio area who are downsizing, who may have some wonderful pieces, rare antiques, artware, sterling silver, whatever it might be. And perhaps the children and grandchildren aren't necessarily interested in those things because of their lifestyles. So here's a terrific way to partner up with getting that information into the hands of Garth's. Rather than pulling out the checkbook and writing a check, with this collaboration then at the podium, I can take my artwork to Amelia, she's going to look at it, appraise it. If she wants it, she'll put it into one of her sales. I then, as the donor, and can determine what percentage I want to give back to the symphony. It can be 25% all the way up to 100%
of
that
net,
item.
Of your net from it.
That's right. That's right. And then Garth has been so kind then to give us part of their commission as well. So that's where this partnership is really coming about. We're really thrilled that we think that this is something totally new that the arts community is really going to grasp onto, and we're going to have people looking into their attics and looking on their walls and in their cupboards to see what they might be able to find.
This made a lot of sense to you, Amelia, right off the bat?
It did. You know, Jeff and I both donate a lot of time around town to lots of worthy nonprofits, but everybody's facing donor fatigue, right? I mean, it's really challenging in today's climate to get the checkbooks out. And so when the CSOL ladies came to talk with us about it, I thought, this is a really creative and brilliant way to invigorate a donor base, to have some fun, to inject some fun and excitement, that whole treasure hunters concept, into their fundraising efforts. And of course, with their boots on the ground, we're happy to donate a portion of our commission back. The symphony is an important aspect of our community. I mean, we know the importance of the arts and in culture. It can't always be about sports. Sorry, Jeff. It's also, the symphony and the museum, and these are the things that add the culture and flavor to our community and really elevate Columbus to to a significant city.
And this isn't happening anywhere else, you said.
Not that we know of.
And, I'm pretty plugged into the art and antiques
community. Exactly.
So I can tell you that, to my knowledge, no other auction house has this kind of partnership out there. We're really excited about it. I think that, the kind of energy that the volunteers have brought to the project is amazing. The symphony has jumped right on board, the staff at the symphony.
So how long has this been going on? Have you sold anything yet?
We haven't yet. So we're just sort of getting our feet under us because it's a brand new program. We're still getting all of the, nuts and bolts worked out and how's it going to work and how's it going to execute. But we're really gearing up for 2014. So, we've discussed, there was an event at Garth's, a pretty successful event in November at Garth's. And we've had some awareness events where we talk about the kinds of things we're seeking, the kinds of things that can be simple for donors to think about, because back to that authenticity comment, we don't want to burden people with having to think about, is this something they're going to want? Is it not? We want to remove all of that insecurity and just say, bring it to one of these events. Have fun with it. Shoot us an email. We set up a link on our website, garths.com/CSOL. Columbus Symphony Orchestra League. And there's a plug and play submission form there. You can put in photographs. You can put in descriptions. You can also email csol@garths.com, or you can pick up the phone and call us.
Because it's broken up into percentages, so let's say I have a piece. Garth is going to donate a portion of their, let's say for the sake of conversation, 10%. Mm-hmm. You're going to say maybe you'll give 2% of that. Mm-hmm. And then as the donor, I want 25% to go to the Columbus Symphony Orchestra League. Is there a limit? What if it's only a $50 piece?
That's been a challenge,
question.
So that is a great question. Yeah, that's been a challenge at the beginning, getting folks to understand that we do have to, there are economies of scale to be had,
right?
And so we are looking for things that are of a higher price point, let's say $250 or above, because below that, we just run ourselves ragged. We run the volunteers ragged, we run the staff at Garth's ragged, and it just doesn't pay for anyone.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're contemplating as well, and I think as we get our feet under us, maybe there's a way that we can take those lower, you know, valued objects, and CSOL could have another event. I mean, these are all things
right,
that we're thinking
about. We could
have our
about. Own, like, lots of figurines or something like that,
sure.
Where you could do a figurine.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Could we do, you know, and also, as we become more centrally located, hopefully into the city, you know, we hope to have some more events for CSOL.
What do you mean as you become more centrally located?
We're moving.
Is that a cryptic?
It is. It's a little cryptic, not much. But, you know, we...
You're moving from Delaware.
We are moving from Delaware, and we're looking... In fact, you know, if any listeners have a space, please let us know.
Really?
Yeah, we are. We're looking for space. We are interested. We've talked with the city. We're really interested in being downtown. Jeff and I have a history of downtown business ownership, and we believe in a vibrant downtown. And Columbus certainly has developed a vibrant
Absolutely.
Downtown. So we're interested in looking for space downtown, and hopefully within the next 24 months or so, we'll be down here. And when we are, it'll make our partnership even easier.
The Symphony offices are just thrilled with this idea. Bill Connor, Denise Regg, Aaron Blue, all of them are on board with this because they see so much potential, and with this partnership.
What kind of feedback are you getting from members?
We're getting great feedback from members. We had a small little get-together with some wine and cheese and so forth, and we invited all of our members to bring either photographs, and I think people need to realize that with this, they can attach a photograph to a document to send to Garth's or bring the actual item to Garth's or to one of our events, and they will be verbally appraised. And so we had lots of members who brought things with them to this social event with the idea it was my mother's, it was my great-grandmother's, this was too big to bring, that kind of thing. So the buy-in, if you will, of our membership and our CSOL has been involved since 1981, basically. We've given over almost, I should say, $2 million back to the Symphony over the years with our fundraising activities. We just felt this was a really terrific opportunity for us. Our goal in 2014 is $50,000 to give back to the Symphony. We hoped.
You don't have to be a member of the league to participate.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
That's
mm-hmm.
the whole point of this, is to let the Central Ohio community know about this program, to go to the Garth's website or to the CSO website, get in touch with CSOL, let us know if you're interested and in how you'd like to participate in donating a percentage of whatever it might be back to the Symphony.
Okay, so we've been talking about the Partners at the Podium, a collaborative between Garth's and the Columbus Symphony Orchestra League to raise money two ways. First, through the boot camp. It's coming up this Wednesday. There's still tickets available.
If people do want to attend, they need to contact you on your website, and hopefully then someone will contact us there.
Right.
It is lunch is involved with it, so we do absolutely have to have a paid reservation.
Gotcha. So for more information about the ticket prices and times, go to the link at our website at wosu.org/allsides, and that might be able to help you out there. The other component of that, of course, is the auctioning of property. By members or anyone who wants to support the Columbus Symphony Orchestra. And you can find a link to that on our website as well at wosu.org/allsides. Has anything surprised you about how this has worked out, Amelia, since it's the first time you've ever done anything like this? Anything taken you by surprise?
Yeah, I think that the enthusiasm of the
Good.
Columbus Symphony Orchestra.
Good. I was hoping
Orchestra
you would say that. The
office.
Passion that we have.
Yeah. Well, so first of all, the volunteers, the Columbus Symphony Orchestra League, I was sold on it in the first meeting because they're just so enthusiastic and passionate. And they said, we'll do you know, we'll do whatever you need. You give us direction, we'll do it. We are boots on the ground. But then also, when we met with the Columbus Symphony Orchestra, you know, you have some closet collectors and auction aficionados yes. sitting in those offices. So they were so enthusiastic. I was a little overwhelmed, actually, uh-huh. which is great. We're really glad for it. I think that, you know, as we all sort of feel our way through it and get more publicity. Thank you for that. You know, it's really going to be exciting to see. I think that $50,000 is just the tip of the iceberg, to be honest with you. Yeah.
Because you never know.
No, we never know who's out there.
It could be one great thing, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we sold a jade bowl last year. We estimated at $30,000 to $50,000. It brought $175,000.
So any jade bowls out there, we're looking for them.
Just make sure you know what real jade looks like. But you'll help them with that, too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's, you know, our skin in the game is putting, you know, the time into authenticating these things and evaluating the objects. And we're happy to do it. Happy to do it all day.
Now, Connie Cahill, you brought in a couple of objects here.
Well,
are they silver or silver plate?
No, they're sterling.
Sterling.
These were some things that my mother just gave me, actually. And I had to laugh because I'd been talking to her about Garths. And I grew up in a home of collectors.
Uh-huh.
My mom and dad on the side owned a little antique shop.
Oh, okay.
And I always kidded my mom and dad that the best stuff got in the house and the other stuff got out in the antique shop. So consequently, my mom and dad have beautiful, beautiful things in their home. And she's willing to share both family pieces that we have because as a young child, she would go and ask her grandmother or her great-grandmother for that little piece of something, an umbrella stand or a hall tree or whatever it might be. So it's, I guess, a vested interest in my part, Anne, to really see this program go because I love these things. And those are two just little sterling silver pieces that I don't know what they were used for. That's why I brought them.
Yeah,
I thought,
right.
Well, maybe Amelia could
One
help me.
One looks like a little soap dish. I'm just going to generalize there. It has some initials. You're right. It's engraved.
Yes, it's engraved.
Is.
What is that?
Well, I doubt very seriously it's a soap dish, although today it could be used as a soap dish. I think that would be a creative uh-huh. upcycle for it. But likely it's a table accoutrement. You know, when setting the table in Victorian times, you have every utensil imaginable, right?
Right.
These were very opulent times. And so both of these appear to be those types of table additions. And sterling silver is a great spot in the market. You know, it is a little soft right now, soft relative to its height. But gold and silver are two of those things that we're urging people
yes.
involved with the Columbus Symphony Orchestra to think about. Because, you know, how often do we hear, it's pretty often, oh, you know, I never use my silver. It's in the drawer. I don't want to polish it. You know, where it's tucked away
but
and not
being
used.
But someone's collecting it?
Yeah, people are collecting it, actually. And so, you know, there's always this fear, too, of melt value. And people talk about melting it. And there is a melt value. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, if you take your sterling silver in to be melted, the reality is the person buying it from you isn't going to give you spot price. I think there's this misnomer that you're going to go in and you're going to check your internet before you leave. And if silver is $33 an ounce today, they're going to offer you $33 an ounce. But they're not, because there's a recovery process to get the silver melted. And then they have to make a profit. That's right.
I, as a sentimentalist, though, would have a really hard time taking anything that you know has been handed down through the family.
Absolutely.
And
having
it melted, because it's not that much money.
No.
I mean, ultimately, even though it's sterling silver, ounce for ounce, I mean, how many ounces perhaps in that?
Pretty small.
Right.
Yeah, pretty small. And this one happens to be weighted. So that's something to think about when you're looking at your sterling. You'll turn it over and it should say weighted or reinforced or filled. And that's going to indicate that it's weighted. So it's somewhat something less than that amount. But this is an awfully sweet little form.
Isn't it? I love it.
It is. I love this.
Toothpicks?
And, yeah. Yeah. It's awfully cute.
And mother of pearl toothpicks, not wooden toothpicks.
Right.
No. That's right. That's exactly right. You know, we have people who, scrappers, who will bring in the better stuff to sell at auction, right? Because they have some conscience about, I'm not going to scrap this. I know that there's value above and beyond the scrap value. And in fact, we had a bronze statue by a European artist that came through and brought well more than the melt weight. And I said, someone brought you this to scrap it? They just didn't know. They just didn't know.
That's what I'm always surprised at.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought
as you talk with people
that.
About the items that they have, and they say, oh, you know, our grandkids don't want that, or our children don't want that. And maybe it's just my background, but I look at something, I think, how could they not want that? If nothing else, the fact that it is a family piece.
Right, exactly.
That it, there again, you were talking earlier about the history of pieces, that I know that history, that family history, but we all can only hold so much. So,
Connie Cahill, thanks for joining us today
to talk
about it. Connie Cahill, she's president of the Columbus Symphony Orchestra League, which has gone into the Partners at the Podium Collaborative with Garth's Auctions in Delaware. Also with us today, Amelia Jeffers. Amelia, it was really nice talking with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Amelia Jeffers, she's the president of Garth's Auctioneers and Appraisers. And for more information about the collaborative Partners at the Podium, go to our website at wosu.org/allsides. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.